Sarah. Hi, welcome to Burn Shit, Sarah.
Hi, welcome. Welcome to our show.
Sarah, have you seen any birds lately?
I have seen... Oh my god, my dog is barking his head off.
Your dog sees a bird.
My dog sees a bird he wants to murder, apparently. No, but I did see a baby praying mantis on our window the other day, and it was so cute. It was like the size of my pinky, and I stared at it for like 20 minutes.
Oh, how did you even find that?
It was on our window. It was straight up just like on our window.
Wow. Jealous.
Yeah. Have you seen any birds?
I mean, I've seen the birds that I normally see. Actually, I was walking home the other day and I saw a yellow warbler. Pointed it out. Yeah, that was actually like really exciting. It's like, oh yeah, this is like a normal bird in my neighborhood now. That's pretty cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah, that doesn't get old.
Well, you know what doesn't get old? Seeing birds at the beach.
Oh, look at that transition.
And what are we talking about today, Mo?
We're talking about some beach and birds.
Some beach and birds.
You know what's funny? Like, I don't even... I mean, I sort of live near a beach, but mostly I just live near, like, the edges of water. They're not really even... They're technically shores. I do live near shore birds. So, but we've been seeing a lot of terns.
Oh, cool.
Which is cool. Yeah, Sam and I were walking, and we saw these two guys, like, with a scope. And every time I see someone with a scope, I'm like, okay, you're definitely a birder.
Yeah.
So...
Wait, or are you a peeping Tom?
Yeah, or are you Jimmy Stewart from your window?
Yeah, there we go.
Or are you a really bad astronomer?
Yeah, there we go. During the middle of the day. Just practicing.
And so say I like you saw, I'm like, oh, I'm totally like hitting these birders up for some info. So I was like, oh hey, like, do you see any birds? And they're like, yeah. And they showed us through that there were the common terns were feeding their little baby terns.
Oh, they got all this noise.
It was super cute. Yeah, it was cool.
Oh.
Yeah. Always well, take no. advantage of other people's expensive equipment.
Oh hell yes. I think that applies to everything in life. It's also like when someone has a pool, I count a pool as expensive equipment.
A pool is expensive equipment.
Yeah. You don't want to be the person who has to manage the pool, but you want a friend with the pool.
Yeah, you want a friend who manages the pool.
Hell yeah.
We're even doing that. Our neighbors bought a kiddie pool for their baby, and we're just straight up like, hey, can we go in the pool? Like, this is a $20 pool you probably got at Target, but I still want to take advantage of it because it's your asset and not mine.
Yeah, hell yeah. Especially because, like, Sloane's not doing much in it.
No. No, she just sits there and, like, eats the stuff that falls into the pool.
Oh. Oh man, she's taking advantage of that free food.
Yeah, right? It's better than anything we serve her, I guess. So anyways, beaches are good. They're even better with birds. This whole episode, we're talking about shorebirds. So the term shorebird covers several related bird families that are all part of this distinct group. And it includes more than 180 species that are technically considered shorebirds around the world, which is quite a bit.
Yeah, that's
we don't
a
have
lot.
That much time.
No.
No one wants to hear us talk about that many birds.
I do, but whatever.
Yeah, maybe some other time. We'll just make this a 18-part series, and we'll talk about 10 birds each episode.
Oh my god. Okay, I take it back.
No, that's a lot. That's too much. Shorebirds come in all shapes and sizes, but they do share certain qualities. Almost all shorebirds prefer wet habitats and shorelines, including coasts and inland waterways. Most shorebirds are carnivorous and enjoy a diet that includes insects, crustaceans, worms, larvae, and mollusks.
You can usually identify shorebirds by their round heads, relatively longer legs, and unique shaped bills that help them probe the sand, mud, gravel, and water for tasty morsels. Kind of like Mo's daughter.
It's so true. All she does is eat. Well, you left the word rocks out of there.
Oh,
all she does
there we
is
go.
Eat rocks at the beach.
There we go. Many shorebirds are sociable, meaning mixed flocks made of several different types of beach birds are common, which can make them a real pain to ID. I remember we had this problem.
Oh my god!
When we were out at Point Pelee, because there were so many shorebirds together, it took a long time to identify a lot of them, and a lot of them we didn't.
Yeah, a lot of them. I mean, that's the story of my birding life.
Yeah, pretty much.
Saw a bird. Don't know what it was.
But I saw it.
Saw it.
However, it is important to note that during the breeding season, shorebirds are generally more shy, but will engage in dramatic distraction displays to protect their ground-level nest and chicks.
We're going to get into it.
Yeah, we are.
So Sarah and I each picked three birds to talk about. I think we picked these mostly based on like their cute factor, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that was just me.
I picked some of them definitely by their cuteness factor, but also by like their interesting factor, which Ooh. Who knows what the fuck that is. What do I mean? Okay.
Well, we'll start off with the cute factor because it comes to no one's surprise that I'm going to be talking about the piping plover. Woo. I'm obsessed with these piping plovers. There are actually about 65 species of plovers worldwide, but we are going to focus on the fan favorite, the piping plover. Small, stocky, and sand-colored, the piping plover rocks a thick black band around its neck and on its forehead during breeding season. They have plump little white bellies and the most adorable orange bill and legs.
Aww.
You can find them running around on wide open, flat, sandy beaches. Basically, everything they do is cute. They run cutely. Their babies are cute, especially when they huddle up under their parents' feathers to stay warm. The way they stick one leg into their wet sand and vibrate the sand and scare up the little crabs and worms and stuff to eat is also super cute. It's technically called foot trembling, but it's not a cute name, so I'm just not going to refer to it as foot
that
trembling.
That sounds like a disease a human would have.
It does, doesn't it?
I've got the foot trembling again.
It's like the first phase of restless leg syndrome is foot trembling.
There we go.
It starts small, and it gets bigger. Piping plovers populations were federally listed as threatened and endangered in 1986. That's like a really long time ago. Relative to when other birds made it on the list, I feel like.
Yeah.
The Northern Great Plains and Atlantic Coast populations are listed as threatened, and the Great Lakes population is endangered. It's believed that, like, there are about 80 pairs of piping plovers in the Great Lakes, so most of the larger populations are in the Northern Great Plains and the Atlantic Coast. And overall, according to the New York City Plover Project, there are less than 8,000 piping plovers left in the whole world.
Aww.
So, if we're being honest, like, these little dudes are not well built to live in this current climate crisis. Breeding habitat has been replaced with shoreline development and recreation, and the availability of quality foraging and roosting habitats in the wintering grounds is also necessary in order to ensure that an adequate number of adults survive to migrate back to breeding sites and successfully nest. So, wow, I kind of started with a downer one. It went from cute to sad real fast.
Okay, but I do have some good news. I've seen like two stories recently, and of course I can't remember exactly where they were, about piping plover populations coming back. Like there was a successful nest, I think, in Ohio recently with chicks. So that's very exciting. So you do kind of see some very minor bouncing back.
Yeah, and even I think that was the second year that the two piping plovers, Monty and Rose, came back to Chicago. The first time Chicago has seen a breeding pair since 1980. So, yeah, I do agree. It's very easy to talk about how sad it is that the population is so far declined, but it's also really cool to see these small efforts of the birds coming back to places where they used to be. And speaking of recreation, I mean, I had to basically, like, fend off volleyballs from the beach that the piping plover pair nested in Chicago. Like, they were so close to the volleyball net. I was like, what animal thought this was a good idea? Like, why are you here? Like, you could be in some great place, but you're here where all these college kids get drunk.
Yeah, I'm going to get into an animal that chooses poor places to have its babies.
Is it this next one?
It's this next one, and it's the killdeer.
Oh, okay, let's hear it.
So the killdeer live throughout North America and are generally found in pastures and fields, but often around a source of water. Their awesome name comes from the wailing killdeer call they have, and due to their loud call, they've often been referred to as the chattering plover and the noisy plover. Killdeer have a characteristic large, round head, large eye, and a short bill, similar to all plovers, and lanky legs. They're brownish tan on top and white below, and the white chest is barred with two black bands, and the brown face is marked with black and white patches. They are adorable, and the downy chicks are even cuter. Just so stinking cute. They exhibit some cute characteristics as well as stopping to bob their heads from time to time. And like we just talked about with nesting, they tend to nest in open areas like gravel roads.
Oh, that's a great choice.
Yeah, so it's not the smartest move sometimes, as these are like generally heavily trafficked areas, such as driveways. However, these birds are quite the actors. So many people have been fooled by their broken wing act, which is where they will get on the ground and flutter as though they've injured a wing to lure people away from their nests. It is so smart, but also probably had to be developed because they were dumb enough to continue to have their nest in these areas.
Sam hates killdeer because he has been fooled by them before. What? And he was so mad to be outsmarted by bird. I think he was like 12 or something when it happened, but he was just like, I hate that bird. That bird is too smart. I hated that it tricked me. And I was like, well, not your fault that you're dumb. But it's so effective, though. Like if you've ever seen it in action, or even just like find it on YouTube or something, but like it's an incredibly effective move.
Oh, it is, and it's insanely smart because it gets you away from their babies, which is exactly
maybe that's
what
I'm gonna start doing in public. Like if someone's like looking at my child too much, I'm just gonna pretend like I broke my leg and just try to steal all the attention.
Okay. Are you concerned they're looking at your child because they're going to steal your child? Or are you concerned because you're not getting all the attention?
Yeah, I don't know. It could go either way.
No, I'm going to go with the latter. I'm going to go with
probably
the
latter.
And I just imagine someone being like, oh, your baby's so cute. And then all of a sudden you just slumping to the ground and screaming, my leg! My leg! That's you.
I think it would work. I think it would work. And then I'll like drag myself across the floor, like away from the baby and be like, come over here, everybody. It's more
come
exciting.
Over here. Let me tell you a tale of my leg.
Okay. Well, this next bird also has a really great way to ward off predators. And this is the black-necked stilt. Aptly named, the black-necked stilt is black on the top half of its body and has long, thin red legs. In fact, they have the second longest legs in proportion to their bodies of any bird, only except flamingos, which makes sense. Because, like, how can you top the flamingo?
You can't top the flamingo.
You can't top the flamingo. The black-necked stilt also has a white neck, white belly, and a long needle-like black bill, which it uses to probe the water surface for aquatic invertebrates, plus some small fish or tadpoles. You'll find them widespread and fairly common throughout the North, Central, and South America, although they are rare or absent from much of the Eastern U.S., which is sad for me.
Sad for me, too.
Sad for us. Just head to mudflats, salt marshes, and flooded fields to see or hear them, as they are often pretty loud. Like most shorebirds, they are incredibly loud and sociable. They like to spread out while they're foraging, and they do roost in small groups. The pairs will remain monogamous throughout the breeding season and collaborate pretty well on raising their four eggs. Both sexes will choose a nest site, which is often on a small island within a marsh, and they take turns watching the nest and adding to the nest lining throughout the incubation period. Although they are territorial during the breeding season, their territories are aggregated and adults will participate jointly in anti-predator displays. One of these is called the popcorn display, where a group of adults will encircle a ground predator and hop side to side while flapping their wings, which I don't really understand what that looks like, but it must look like popcorn because that's why they called it popcorn display.
I can imagine it pretty well, and it is definitely looking like little pieces of popcorn just like moving around on the ground.
Boop, 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 boop. I had thought of popcorn reading. Like, that must be where they get that term from, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I would always feel like I was flailing around when I would try to read during popcorn reading. Like, you're, like, waiting for your name to be called on, and you're like, oh, shit, are they going to say my name? I don't know what this word is. Anyways.
That's you. That would be you. You would pull out your phone and have it read it for you.
Yeah, I would. I'd be like, I can't pronounce any of these goddamn words. Need my auto Google reader to read it for me. All right, so one last note on the black-necked stilt. For the ultimate beach birds, the Hawaiian subspecies of the black-necked stilt. So habitat loss and hunting have led to a sharp decline of the Hawaiian subspecies of the black-necked stilt. Just a few of the freshwater wetlands that are still found in the Hawaiian islands are its main habitat. Its name in the Hawaiian language is Aeo, I think, A-E-O, which means one standing tall. Which is it's a very good name for this bird.
That is. That's a good one. I'm sad about the Hawaiian subspecies, though.
I know. I mean, Hawaii, like, it's got to be so hard to be anything on Hawaii at this point. Like, there's so much buildup and, like, so much habitat loss. Because, like, who doesn't want to be there, including all the animals that have lived there forever?
Okay, sorry, depressing moment over. We're going to talk about an amazing bird that's so cute again.
cute birds. I told you we picked the cute ones.
We did. We're talking about the American woodcock. American woodcocks belong to the family of sandpipers and are plump, short-legged birds with a short body and a large head equipped with a long, straight bill. They have a duller coloring of like grays, light browns, and buff tones, and dark and light patterned wings. You can find them in eastern North America and generally in forests and wet meadows. American woodcocks are probably known best for their distinctive walk, which is the back and forth rocking movement. It is insanely funny looking and so adorable because they're just like, like, I don't even know.
There are so many songs that dance has been set to.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great. And all of them work.
Yeah. Oh, they all work because it's like the perfect little like back and forth movement. But this isn't the only cool thing about the American woodcock. So on spring nights, the males perform this amazing display where they give a buzzy like peep call and then launch into the air. So their erratic display flight includes distinctive twittering flight sounds and ends with a steep dive back to the ground. So it's a very, like, it's a very well-known display, and it's supposed to be really, really cool. They also come very close to having eyes in the back of their head.
That's which creepy.
Everyone would love, I think. Their large eyes are positioned high and near the back of their skull, and this arrangement lets them keep a watch for danger in the sky while they have their heads down, probing in the soil for food.
Okay, question for you.
Yeah.
What would be your favorite circumstance in which to have eyes in the back of your head? Like, when would you use that power the most? Like, you still have eyes in the front, but you have an additional set in the back.
I can only think of using it in, like, dangerous situations. Like, I don't know when I would be like, man, I'm really interested in what's going on in front and behind me, unless I'm, like, in danger. Like, if I was in one of those, like, Saw movies in real life, totally would use it all the time.
Saw, real life.
Or on a train, maybe? Like, if I'm bored and I have to be on the train for hours commuting, yeah. I would want to be able to just be like, yeah, what's that guy doing behind me? Oh, he's touching himself? Cool. What's that lady doing in front of me? Oh, she's sleeping? Cool. Like, that's the train.
That is the train.
That is the train.
Every time, pretty much.
What would you use it for?
Oh, yeah, I probably should have had an answer before I asked my own question. Okay, I don't know if I would use it, like, anymore. But I think if I was, like, at a club, I'd always want to know if, like, someone was watching my butt, like, while
there
I was dancing, you know?
Dude, that is the smartest use of this. I totally take back my answer. I want eyes in the back of my head if I am dancing because I do not want anyone approaching me. Take it back.
But you know what? Maybe that's why the woodcock has them, too.
Oh,
they're like,
maybe.
Oh, they're doing that dance the whole time, and they're like, oh, he's grinding up on me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why they're kind of like inching. But I feel like, no, I don't know. Because I feel like they're kind of like inching back. Like, yeah, baby, get on it.
Well, maybe that's why I want eyes in the back of my head. I want to make sure I'm facing the right target.
So you don't just accidentally like grind your butt up against a wall and think you got it?
Yeah, exactly. Be like, oh man, this guy's rock hard. Oh, wait, it's literally a cement pole. I don't know. That might have happened before. Are we allowed to say that on our podcast?
Did this really happen?
No, it didn't really happen, but it probably did. I mean, I don't know.
I can just imagine you being like so into yourself and just like grinding, and then you're like, okay, moment of reveal. I'm going to turn around to this guy who's obviously very into me, and then you just smack your face into a wall. I'm so, so happy you brought this up.
Oh, yeah, it's mostly because, like, all of my dance clubs have been, like, in basements, so there's always those, like, cement pillars, like, holding up the foundation of the house.
Yep.
Like, Nancy
yep.
Frat Parties and Rick's in Ann Arbor are basically my two Rick's. Dance, like, favorite places, right? So...
Yeah, Rick's is definitely a place where I would want eyes all around my face, just everywhere.
I would like to be a spider in this situation.
Pretty much. Okay, now that we've gone on that tangent, back to the American woodcock. Just two more interesting facts, because I think this bird is adorable and great. They don't nest for very long. Downy young actually leave the nest a few hours after hatching. So they're like hatched out of the nest. Which, you know, for other birds, you know, like robins, nest for weeks. You know, so
they got made.
Yeah. Females tend to the young and feed them, and after the few days, the young begin probing the soil, learning to search for food, which I thought was really interesting. Finally, they have some weird-ass names that they're also known as, which include the Timberdoodle, the Labrador Twister,
what?
The Night Parrot, the Night Partridge, sorry, the Night Partridge, and Bog Sucker.
What? Like, wasn't Woodcock bad enough? They had to go and give them these names too?
Dude, I think the name Timberdoodle is amazing. Like, I'm not gonna lie.
What does it even mean to be a bog sucker? Like, what does that even
Dude, that's gonna be my next insult for somebody who pisses me off. I'm like, well, you're a freaking bog sucker.
It's so effective, too.
It's so effective.
Oh yeah. My gosh, I love it.
Yep, it's gonna be like, go die, you bog sucker.
Go to go suck a bog.
Go suck a bog, you dick. Yep, got it. Okay, so that's the American Woodcock.
Not surprised that bird name led us down that trail.
Oh, yeah, of course. We're mature. Yeah.
We're mature. Well, I also picked a bird that has some really great nicknames. I had to include this one because so far, to date, I think it has been one of my favorite shorebirds I've ever seen in action. And you'll only find them along the ocean coast of Mexico and the southern United States. And they move up the east coast to Massachusetts during breeding season. But in my case, I saw this bird when a hurricane was blown in and blew up to Maine. And that is the black skimmer.
Woo!
Black skimmers have super long wings, and if they're like on the ground, like just standing, they actually look really awkward when they're not flying because they just kind of like, it doesn't seem like that bird should be able to stand with how long its wings are. They have a white chest and underwings and bright orange legs. Their bills are orange near their head and then black near the tip. And the shape of the bill is what makes them so unique, and this is why. The bottom part of their bill extends out a lot farther than the top part, like a couple inches, and they use this to their advantage when feeding. Skimmers feed by opening the bill. They're flying in the air. They're flying over water. They open their bill and they drop. let me paint you a picture.
Yeah, got it.
So, black skimmer flying over water, really close to the water. It drops its bill open and drops the lower part of the bill open, skims the water surface until they feel a fish. And then once they feel one, they relax their neck and quickly close their jaws, which essentially like whips the fish out of the water and into their mouth. It's nuts.
Wow. That's cool. It's nuts.
And there are only 3 species of birds that do this on the entire planet, and all of them are skimmers, which I guess makes sense. That's how they got their name. But the cool thing is because they're basically feeding by touch, it means they can forage at night, though they do prefer dusk and dawn meals. But I just love the idea that they're just like basically like, do I feel food? Do I feel food? Yep. Bloop. And then they scoop it up.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. This feeding flair has given them a lot of colloquial nicknames in the United States, including none that are as interesting as the woodcocks, but I'm going to say them anyways. Scissorbill, Sea Dog, Storm Gull, Razorbill, and Cutwater.
Okay, Sea Dog is obviously the coolest name.
It's pretty cool. That's actually the name of our minor league baseball team, too.
The Sea Dogs?
The Sea Dogs. And I didn't know what it was, and I still don't know what it is, but now I'm just going to pretend they're black skimmers.
Okay, please get me a t-shirt for the Sea Dogs.
I will. It's got a seal on it. So I don't, but I looked it up and like seal is not a nickname for a sea dog. So I don't
know, but the seals have been called the puppies of the sea.
Oh, okay.
So that's probably where they get it from.
They extrapolated puppy to dog to sea dog to baseball.
Yep. Seals have been known to like nickname puppies of the sea.
They are kind
of very,
puppies.
They're very friendly.
Aw, little puppies. But anyways, black skimmers.
Black skimmers. Okay. Now we're on to our last bird, which. I chose this bird because of its interesting factor. Actually, I just chose this bird because it's very secretive. And this is the Sora. So, Soras are freshwater marsh birds that can be found throughout North America. They're small, chubby little birds, kind of like the woodcock. And they have a stubby bill, which is not generally indicative of shorebirds. Most shorebirds have long bills, but they've got the stubby little bill and short tail. They're gray and brown, and they have their bill, the short bill, is super bright yellow. Like, people say it looks like candy corn. It's so bright yellow. Other notable features, generally seen on the males, are a black mask and a throat patch with vertical white lines on the side and then a white patch under the tail.
In case you were wondering why shorebirds are hard to identify.
Yeah.
It's because there's all these details.
Yeah, they all look the same, and then there's all these random ass details. They're,
so true.
They're just shorebirds. I would like to say, though they have these little plump, cute little bodies, don't let them fool you. They are excellent flyers. Generally, they live in marshes, so you don't see them flying that well, but they regularly migrate long distances, with many going to South America for the winter. With these birds being well known for being secretive, they can be best seen early in the morning or late evening when they're venturing them for food. And though they are the most secretive, like, it's very hard to see these birds, they are the most abundant and widespread rail in North America.
The irony.
What?
I don't know. Maybe irony is the wrong word. Like, the fact that they're so secretive.
Oh, no, you cut out.
Oh, well, maybe I still had the wrong word. Now no one will know what the wrong word was. But I do think it's weird that they're secretive, but also abundant.
Write to us to figure out what the wrong word was.
Can you fill in the blank of Mo's brain?
Probably not.
No, probably not.
What I like about this bird, too, though, is that this shy bird won't be jumping at any fright. When they are scared, they let out their characteristic whinny call. So maybe the best time to try and see these birds is Halloween, because you can scare them. Woo-hoo-hoo! And then they'll let out their whinny call, and you can run into the woods and see them.
I like that theory. I like it.
Yeah. I mostly just wanted to throw Halloween in.
I mean, you had to. Emo bird. You turned it into an emo bird.
So that's the Sora.
I like the Sora.
Yeah, they're cool.
I actually had not heard of the Sora until you said, I'm going to write about the Sora.
Oh, okay. So they actually, there is a really good birding spot near where I live. It's Kensington Metro Park. And there was a Sora there this summer. And it caused quite the freak out.
Because it, like, wasn't supposed to be there?
Well, no, they come this way, but just the fact that someone saw it there, people were like, oh, yeah, this very secretive bird, I'm going to go see it. I didn't get to go see it because I have baby, but.
I'm going to keep using that excuse until my baby's, like, 12 years old.
Oh, but. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. So these were some of the shorebirds. Like Mo said, there's like 180 different shorebirds, so we're not going through all of them, but we picked out some cool ones. Let us know what your favorite was, or if it didn't make the list that we talked about, and it should. Maybe we'll do another episode.
We did want to wrap up this episode by just sharing a few shorebird safety tips, since we are sharing the beach with these beautiful birds. These are very simple tips, but they're always good to remember. First of all, don't litter. Don't be that guy. Don't be that girl. Just don't be that person who's throwing their trash and expecting other people to pick it up, because people don't like picking it up. However, you can also be that person and pick up trash if you want to. Like, if you could do both. You could, like, not throw your trash and pick up other people's trash. That's, like, a great thing to do to help out the birds.
Also, don't be a dick and try and get really close to them. I know a lot of people see nature or, like, wildlife and are like, oh, let me get as close to fucking possible to this animal and freak it out. No, respect their space. I know most birders totally understand this. Most people in general, but respect their space. You don't need to get up in their shit.
Especially photographers, like, I get it, but like,
yeah, no.
If you've already dropped thousands of dollars on equipment, like, just drop a couple thousand more and buy a really great lens. So you don't have to get so close to the birds.
Exactly.
Obviously made that life choice before, so just make it again. But also keep taking pictures because I love them. Okay. Lastly, and this one is, like, possibly up there in terms of, like, the most important, is, like, you really got to leave access to the water line. So, in addition to leaving the bird space, you need to make sure that they can access the water line, because this is how and where many wading shorebirds and plovers, in particular, often eat. So if they can't get to the water or they don't feel comfortable accessing where the waves meet the sand, it's going to be hard for them to eat, hard for them to feed their young, hard for them to teach their young how to eat. So that is a very important aspect of the shorebird safety in our life.
So yeah, that's birds that live in the water, on the water, shores.
Shorebirds.
Shorebirds.
All right, we wanted to close out this episode by doing a few more listener responses to a question that we recently posed on Instagram, which was, if any bird could be your neighbor, what bird would it be and why? Sarah is going to read us some of the responses from our lovely listeners.
So we got turkey vultures is quite a few of the responses. And as you can guess, the reason being is because they can clean up all of the shit in the neighborhood. They're a great cleanup crew. And yeah, they're chill, quiet neighbor who's basically a janitor. They're your quiet janitor neighbor. Sounds great, right?
I mean, I just talked about picking up trash, and maybe we all just need vultures to be on the beaches picking up people's trash.
Yeah, that would be great. And another person says something, EJ Spink, something that stays hidden and doesn't vocalize at night, maybe a spotted towhee.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then I feel like a couple people wanted actually to hear the noises. SC Bird Nerd said a wood thrush, because their song is one of their favorites, so they could listen to it all the time. Yep.
Yeah, so good.
And then Nicole Worth Designs said a willow ptarmigan, because they have an awesome sound.
I've never heard that sound.
I haven't either. And then a couple other ones that we had were Dane Jason said a northern ghost hawk, because they're the baddest bird on the block, which I would agree with. Mama Bird 80 said a cuckoo, because I've never seen them.
I love how selfish some of these answers are. Just like, well, I haven't seen this bird, so like, this is the bird I want. But like, I totally get it.
Yeah, any bird. If you want that bird to be your neighbor. Joha Becker said a white-breasted nuthatch, so every time I looked in their yard, I would smile.
Oh!
And then this response from Vermfly is my favorite. He said, any of them. Birds rule.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. Nailed it with Nailed that it. Response. Even though I have to say I'm kind of disappointed. I just see robins as my neighbors every day.
I mean, you could be that lady who had the California condors on her porch, like, shitting all over it.
Dude, I would not care. I would be like, look at this. Look at this. This is amazing. I would not care. I mean, there's the amount of poop I deal with on a daily basis. What's a few hundred condor, or a couple condor, 100 condors. I'm fighting 100 condors coming straight on my front yard. I don't even think there are that many.
That would be the real miracle. Yeah. There are more condors here than there have been documented in the entire state.
And they're all pooping.
They're all pooping.
I'm five years old. So yeah, thanks for those responses, everyone. We're always interested to hear what people think, because Mo and I obviously are just over here sharing our thoughts. So why not add in some probably better responses? Because our thoughts sometimes are just five-year-old garbage.
Yeah, do we have an answer to this question even?
You go first. I got to think about it.
All right, mine's going to be a selfish one. I really want to be a painted bunting, because I've never seen one. But also, I think it would be really hard to mistake a painted bunting if it was my neighbor. Like, I would definitively know, like, what that bird was if it showed up. Because I'd be like, oh, that bird is unlike anything else that is even remotely near where I live. So I would be way down to see a painted bunting.
Okay, I think my answer is going to be an emperor penguin.
Oh, I love it!
Because they're just so cute.
You'd have the friendliest little neighbor.
I know, they're the friendliest neighbor, and if they had kids, they'd just march over to my house, and we'd all hang out, and it would be adorable. So yeah, I'm good.
Would they be the neighbor with the pool?
Oh, well, yeah.
It would be frozen all the time, but you could probably still use it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's like 100 degrees out, I'm going to use it.
Oh, ever private. Dude, solid answer. I love that answer.
Thanks. I was like, what do I want? Oh, yeah, I want an emperor penguin.
Oh, love it. Well, everybody, thank you for tuning in for this Beach and Birds episode of Bird Shit Podcast. We hope you have a great summer. We hope you give the birds a great summer by keeping your distance and making sure that you appreciate them every time you're out there. Feel free to send us some fan mail at hellobirdshit@gmail.com or find us on Instagram and Twitter at Bird Shit Podcast.
Thanks.
Keep your eyes to the skies.
I guess we're asking this time. Bye.